This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
We're very fortunate to have on the Jodcast today one of the original moon men, Dr. Buzz Aldrin. Thank you very much for being on the Jodcast.
Well, I came just to talk to the three of you and a few other people around here.
As our listeners love to hear about research related to astronomy, if it's not casting your mind back too far, we thought we'd ask you about the research that led to your doctoral thesis to do with manned orbital rendezvous, and maybe also the tools that you helped to design related to spacewalks. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, there wasn't much to research, really. There were just a few different papers that had been written by different people and different procedures, and there were equations that could use the motion between two objects, and you could solve those, but nothing really fit into much of a logical pattern. So I just decided that you need to want to make a transfer between one orbit and the other.
So, for example, two planets.
And you can do the classic 180-degree Holman transfer, or you can do something shorter than that, and you can adjust where in orbit you do this and what the characteristics might be of doing a transfer, and then select what you'd really like to do, and then set the situation so that you're approaching the other until you get to the right place, and then you initiate. And this seems so logical to me, because that's what we did in fighter pilot training, or in just plain airplane training. You take off from a runway, then you turn on what we call crosswind. You fly for a short ways, then you turn and you line up with the runway downwind, because you're going with the wind. Then you turn on base leg, and those are all very automatic things, but not the turn to final. That's where you really have to get the guidance, looking at what you see and what you think you ought to see, and then you make a correction. That's what you're really doing. You're lining things up. And so if that is how you can go about rendezvous, you can do that by putting checkpoints between when you start and when you hope to finish, that will allow you to make corrections when it's not quite doing what you want to do. Or you can be making corrections all along. And in my thesis, I chose to make corrections whenever it was needed. When as I was programming the site to move, what I ought to see, the flashing light of the target doing it. And if it approached the edge, then I would make a correction. But it's probably better to do scheduled ones. That's what we ended up doing. And the competing systems just didn't have the logic, the understanding that the crew, all of them, were pilots, some test pilots.
So I wanted to ask, in your thesis, in your dedication, in your thesis, you actually said something along the lines of, if only I could be one of them. Did you ever think that you would become an astronaut at that point? Did you know?
I really never gave up. When I did apply the first time in 1962, my really good friend, who was a year behind at West Point, but he was together with me in a squadron in Germany, and then when he went back, he went to the test pilot school. Well, he first went to Michigan, got master's degree in test pilot school, and 1962 comes along, we talk, and he says, I'm qualified, I'm going to apply. And I said, well, I will too. But they didn't pick me, but the next year, I was persistent, and I tried again.
So, obviously, you must have been thinking about this for a long time before. What got you interested in becoming an astronaut?
Well, it was doing things that were in the future, that were more than just flying and testing what kind of airfoil or the little change. I was interested in going higher, and if space is a place,
that, not one step further,
then you might want to do that. And of course, when I felt like I might not be selected in 60, I was already at MIT. And I was sort of resigned to, well, I'll just keep doing. But I had already chosen to do Rendezvous in Space, but I didn't think that that would get me there at all. But then it became persistent when it looked like it was really good.
And you ended up on the first mission to the moon, which really is something that seems beyond a dream, really, to go to the moon.
Well, it wasn't automatic at all. I thought, because I knew more than these other guys did about space, they knew how to test airplanes, you know, so what? They land on aircraft carriers. But I knew something, and I helped to train some of their... So I felt, obviously, I'm going to get a chance to fly in the two-man Gemini. It didn't look like, when the assignments come out, that I was going to fly. But a tragedy killed a backdoor neighbor of mine. Then they needed a crew to move, to take to move to that crew as backup. And then that put me in a position to fly on the last one. And then they needed to do better in spacewalking.
Right.
Well,
so you did.
I was a stupid guy, and somebody suggested, why don't you use underwater? I thought, that's a good idea, you know.
So
that should work.
You had experience of doing spacewalks, and you helped to design tools to use on those.
No, I just made myself available to do that training for the last mission. And it began to work quite well, but not well enough. I thought it was fine, but they didn't want to take a risk and use the more complicated backpack maneuvering unit that you could separate and move around like George Clooney.
Yeah,
really horsing around.
That doesn't look very sensible when he does that, does it?
No, it didn't. I'm glad it didn't to you either.
I questioned whether he really would have been allowed to be an astronaut in real life. When you think back to that experience on the moon, does it feel real or surreal to have done that? Is it
very
vivid?
If we were the only ones that did it, then it would seem rather remarkable, a once occurrence. But when other people have done it, you see what can be done in those type missions, and then we've done spacewalking, and we've had the Skylab, and people inside the Skylab were running around inside. That was the funniest thing I thought I'd ever seen. Real clever. They got the inside of this cylinder, and on the inside, of course, they were floating, but once they started moving, the centrifugal force was keeping them out, and they could run around like a mouse in a...
Because I
had mice. Yeah. I built a mouse cage that had one of those things.
Like in 2001, A Space Odyssey, where they kind of just walk in any direction.
But doing it with mice is much better.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Where do you get to Mars?